Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Rabbi Moses ben Nachman, known in English as Nachmanides and by the acronym the Ramban, was one of the most creative Kabbalists, one of the deepest and most original biblical interpreters, and one of the greatest Talmudic scholars the Jewish tradition has ever produced. Join us as we talk with Moshe Halbertal about his recent book, Nachmanides, Law and Mysticism, where he provides a broad, systematic account of Nachmanides' thought, exploring his conception of halakha and his approach to the central concerns of medieval Jewish thought, as well as the relationship between Nachmanides' Kabbalah and mysticism and the existential religious drive that nourishes them. You're listening to New Books in Jewish Studies, a channel of the New Books Network, and I'm Michael Morales, your host. Moshe Halbertal is the John and Golda Cohen Professor of Jewish Thought and Philosophy at Hebrew University and Gruss Professor of Law at NYU Law School. He has also written Maimonides' Life and Thought. Moshe, welcome to New Books in Jewish Studies.
Thank you.
So tell us about yourself and how you came to be interested in Nachmanides.
Right. I teach philosophy and Jewish thought at the Hebrew University, and I'm a professor at NYU Law School. Nachmanides attracted me for many years because of the fascinating combination of his work, which is a combination first of three areas of creativity. One is, he is one of the greatest Talmudic interpreters and halachist, meaning one of the greatest scholars of Jewish law, but also wrote and established a school of Talmudic learning in Barcelona, in Catalonia. And he is known for the depth of his conceptual analysis of law, and also for his wonderful close reading and philological sensitivity of the Talmudic text. So one great achievement has to do with his legal great work. In some ways, he's the greatest Talmudist of the 13th century. He passed away in 1270. And was born in 1194. So he lived in some ways through the 13th century and is the greatest Talmudist of the 13th century. His second achievement is he wrote a commentary on Torah, on the five books of Moses. And the commentary of Torah is one of the greatest achievements of Torah commentary of the Jewish world as a whole that we know of. It's again combined with an acute sense of the text, psychological depth to the biblical characters, and a sensitivity to the larger literary unit of the text. His commentary on Torah is studied and copied and admired for good reasons. So that's the second achievement. The third achievement is that he's one of the greatest Kabbalists, Jewish mystics, transmitting the esoteric knowledge of Kabbalah And in some ways, being a great rabbi and a great Talmudic scholar, he's responsible in legitimizing this esoteric tradition as a central theme, centrally integral, authentic theme of the Jewish tradition as a whole. And the Kabbalistic learning is given to us in his Torah commentary after he gives the straightforward sort of direct interpretation. He makes allusions that he titles By Way of Truth, Al Derech HaEmet, By Way of Truth. And then he gives a kind of an esoteric hint about the deepest Kabbalistic meaning of the text, the symbol, the symbols, the divine allusions, and everything that includes in that. Now, it's a very cryptic text, very hard to decipher, because after it's transmitting an esoteric tradition. And we, among other things, we can make sense of it because of commentaries written by his students of students who interpret some of those Kabbalistic allusions to us. Besides that, he wrote a few sermons that we have that as well include Kabbalistic traditions in it. So we have basically three great achievements in one person. You know, any of them would be enough for one very fruitful life. He has combined the three of them. Besides all of that, just talking about the person and his greatness, he was involved in a great public dispute or polemic with a Dominican clergy in front of the King of Aragon. Published this dispute. And it was one of the masterpieces or main documents of the Jewish-Christian polemics in the Middle Ages. Towards the end of his life, in 1267, he migrated from Spain, from Barcelona, to the land of Israel. He was in Akko, lived in Akko, and continued to edit his commentary on Torah from knowledge that he gained in the land of Israel, including some geography. He saw that his geographic imagination of the land in Barcelona was different from the reality that he encountered, and he inserted it into his biblical commentary. So we have a very an extraordinary figure of a combination of law, interpretation, and mysticism in one person.
I know you've touched a bit on his thought already, but can you offer us an overview, a brief sketch of Nachmanides' life and thought?
Right. So he's born in Girona, which is a small town next to Barcelona, where there was a circle of Kabbalists in that small town. By the way, you can visit that town and the Jewish quarter. The Jewish old quarter is intact, which is interesting. And then he moved to Barcelona, where he became the great rabbi of Barcelona. Already at a young age, he writes commentary on Talmud. Another maybe important point, and here is something very unique about him. Being in Barcelona, he has a full view of Jewish culture as a whole. Jewish culture is dispersed from North Africa to Andalusia, which is South Spain, to Provence, to Northern France, to Germany. So you have a whole variety of Jewish culture produced. And he has a synoptic view, rare synoptic view, of all the streams of Jewish culture of the 12th century prior to him. Being in that position, he has a way of integrating those worlds. For example, in the commentary of Torah, he has Rashi, that is the main figure coming from Ashkenaz, from North France, Ibn Ezra, who's a figure Andalusian figure, Maimonides. So he has this synoptic view, which is rare, and also in his Talmudic commentaries. He's in some ways the first European Jew in the large view of Jewish culture. And in 1232, erupts a debate about Maimonides' writings, a huge controversy about whether they are heretical or not. And it's interesting, he gets involved in that. And he's the only one who's actually can talk to both camps, and he knows the cultural codes of those camps. And he manages to lower the stakes and bring the camps together through his activity. So there he is. And one very important thing about his life, that he is not only a great figure, he is also initiates a school of great mystics and scholars and rabbis in Catalonia. His student, Shlomo Ibn Adret Rashba, then becomes the main figure of Catalanian Jewry, but not only Catalonia, all of Spain, basically all of the Jewish world. So there is a school coming out of him. That school, in some ways, was destroyed in 1391, where violent pogroms and clashes against Jews of Spain erupt, including the destruction of the Barcelona Jewish community, leading a problematic century that ended with the expulsion of the Jews of Spain in 1492. So Nachmanides is also a founder of a great school, a great Talmudic and mystical school.
Are the whereabouts of his tomb in Israel still known?
Unfortunately not. We think we know where he was buried, but there is no burial space. We found the seal, his seal actually was found. And his latest work, which is a sermon in Rosh Hashanah that he wrote, was produced in Akko towards the end of his life. He kept on working. Yeah.
The subtitle of your book is Law and Mysticism. Can you tell us what is special about Nachmanides' contribution to Halakha?
So a few things. One that we already mentioned is really his commentary on the Talmud, Chidushei HaRamban, the novella of Nachmanides in Talmud, which have a very unique power to them. There is that if we look at Talmudic commentary and Talmudic learning, the 12th century was a great century of a burst of great Talmudic learning. 11th, 12th century, figures like Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, Ravad, Maimonides, these are giants. And they come after prior Talmudic commentaries produced by figures whom we call the Geonim, that basically were active in the 9th, 10th, 11th century. And they were overshadowed and challenged by the creativity of the 12th century figures. And one interesting thing is that Nachmanides, who has the tools of the 12th century Talmudist, uses them to protect the old traditions. That's something very unique about his legal work. Clearly he expands with the expansion of the 12th century, but what marks him is a certain commitment to the learning of the past. As if he's encountering a burst of almost and him being a center that collects all those bursts, he wants to anchor a certain stable past given that burst. So there is a kind of a restorative thrust in his legal work. And also, one very important thing is his contribution to philosophy of halacha, to philosophy of law, through a deep debate he has with Maimonides about interpretation, authority, revelation. The greatest, I would say, the greatest text written in philosophy of Jewish law by the two giants of medieval law, Jewish law, Maimonides and Nachmanides. Maimonides wrote this text called the Book of Commandments, where Nachmanides critically annotated that book. And in two sections, very long sections, he challenges the foundations of Maimonides' philosophy of law. Now, the main issue there is what is interpretation and what is authority and how do we understand controversy in law? And Nachmanides is of the view, Maimonides tries to shape a core of law given at Sinai, which is always stable. And controversy enters the law when rabbinic human interpretation begins to expand on the core given material at Sinai, passed on from one tradition to the other. And their interpretation is not is really an expansion of that core, but doesn't define the core, according to the Maimonidean picture. Now, Nachmanides views revelation as multifaceted. So for him, controversy is not an outcome of later human interpretation, but it's in the very nature of revelation itself, which is multifaceted. Right? There are different ways. God gave the Torah with different meanings to start with. Now, the role of the interpreter to Maimonides is constitutive, meaning, from Nachmanides' perspective, constitutive, meaning he has to create a binding meaning from the multiplicity of prior revealed meanings in the text. And he uses a very interesting thing that maybe some very modern, in some ways postmodern, views of interpretation will use. He says, "Al da'at chachamim the Torah mitna Torah," meaning the Torah was given according to what the sages will interpret it, because as such, it doesn't have a prior meaning, prior obligatory meaning. What it has is a multiplicity of options that then the interpreter constitutes, the court, the rabbinic authority constitutes the obligatory meaning out of that multiplicity. So he has a very interesting, fascinating vision of the philosophy of law, confronting Maimonides, which I try to explore in the book in great detail, because it's so fundamental in terms of what is interpretation, what is truth, by the way, because according to Nachmanides, when two rabbis argue about how to read Torah, it's not like one is wrong and one is right, because Torah basically contains all possible readings. Now, when the rabbis decide the matter with according to majority or a court, what they do is constitute out of those possibilities a functioning unified reading of a multiple text. That connects to Nachmanides' own view of Torah. Here comes his Kabbalah, that Torah shouldn't be read as a verbal expression of God's revelation to people, but it's God's own self-revelation. There is almost an identity between Torah and God. He says that the primordial form of Torah is the names of God, right? Very radical idea of divine language. And therefore, it includes an infinite possible meanings, like the infiniteness of God, which our human reading just touches or scratches the very thin layer of its multiple divine meanings. So there is a connection here between his philosophy of law and his mystical idea of the text and its relationship to God.
Now, in relation to Nachmanides' mysticism, you note that it is possible to piece together his Kabbalistic thought by reading between the lines in his Torah commentary. Can you give us a glimpse of this mysticism?
Yeah, well, it's such a, this is such deep and complex teaching. But one thing, I think one theme that comes up from Nachmanides, and I think it's the core of his existential thinking, which is that, you know, for Kabbalists, God is a self-emanating being. Where from the infiniteness of God, Nachmanides doesn't use the term infinite, he used the term afisa muhletet, the absolute nothingness, if you want to translate it. There comes God's revealing himself through his different dimensions called sfirot that emanate from that infinite being. And clearly, in that respect, he follows the Kabbalistic tradition of trying to understand the divine life and the relationship between the dimensions of the Godhead. Now, for him, and here I come to the human existence, for him, the initial state of the human was cleaving to God, almost like an extension of God. And the first primordial sin, by the way, I think Maimonides is the first Jew who uses the term chetakadmon, the primordial sin of humans, had to do with the emergence of a human will. When Adam and Eve ate from, and this is read symbolically according to Kabbalistic reading, they read from the tree of the fruit of the tree of knowledge, and they say now they will know ladat tovera, they will come creatures who know good and bad. Maimonides interprets in some ways with his great philological insight that the term know is also means as well to will. So for Nachmanides, the initial fall of the human had to do with the cutting the state of cleaving to God through the development of an individuating will. So humans are torn from the divine through that emergence of will of their own. Okay. If we want to give it an analogy, it's like an adolescent's way of individuating themselves from parents by having their own will of saying yes or no, etc. Separating yourself through will. Now that, for Nachmanides, that also brought death, because death and dying is a function of individuation. We humans as general, if you want to say, creatures never die. If we want to say, if we want to give an analogy, our genetic material can pass on for generations, right? It can appear a million years from now. What dies in us is our individual memories and biography and life, etc., etc. But in the pre-fallenness state, humanity was in a state of cleaving to God, where actually for Maimonides also the human body wasn't that embodied. It was like it was a thin body of light, as if, you know, just a great body of light that was nourished from the divine affluence, not from the material things of the world. So we became both separate and diminished and finite. And the human struggle and human history is to restore that initial unity through different modes of keeping the Torah and mystical mystical self-discipline that will lead to that coming back to the primary unity, which will be fulfilled at the messianic period. For him, the redemptive moment is humanity's coming back to its own initial. So I struggle existentially, and this, you know, this is woven through complex Kabbalistic symbolism, but our struggle existentially is to restore that lost unity that was emerged out of the emergence of the will. And then, and that gives meaning to Torah and to the law and other things. That's, I would say, if we want to talk about one aspect of his mystical thought, that's, you can begin there. You can, I have a chapter in the book called Law, Death, Sin, and Redemption, where all those things are tied together. That will be one way of at least beginning to look at his thought.
So, Moshe, what's next for you in terms of research or writing?
Thanks. I've published actually a book that is mainly focused on Talmudic material. It's called The Birth of Tao, which is the rise of questions of dealing with uncertainty in rabbinic literature. By the way, Nachmanides deals with, among other things, those issues in his learning. So that's a project that I just finished, not just, but a few months ago. And then, trying to continue some of the work on the Nachmanides, Maimonides world of great medieval Jewish philosophy, Kabbalah, and law in different aspects of that.
Moshe, we appreciate hearing from you and about your insight into Nachmanides. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Friends, you've been listening to New Books in Jewish Studies, a channel of the New Books Network. Until next time, goodbye.